I'm Laura Harper Lake.
And I'm Sarah Reitzman, and you're listening to Creative Guts. Greetings from the Echo Thrift Shop. That's right, we are recording this week's episode from a little thrift store in Durham, New Hampshire.
It's quite distracting because I want to buy all the great clothes here.
Right?
Man, they should pay us for promoting.
This is, yeah, they really should. I agree. Actually, fun fact, it's literally my job to promote the Echo Thrift Shop, and I do get paid to do it. Oh. So.
Where am I seeing the dividends from this?
I'll catch you a percent.
Yeah, yeah.
So, my husband is sick and kicked us out of the apartment, which is fine because I live right next door to a thrift store. So we broke into the thrift store to do some recording with somebody who coincidentally I met because we both worked at this thrift store. So
for any law enforcement listening, we did not actually break in because you just made it sound like you live next door to a separate building of a thrift store and we broke in by force.
Listen, Laura, I am very badass and I feel like
I live to the letter of the law.
Laura's a rule follower and I am a rule breaker.
So this is going to go far with our friendship.
I punched a hole through a window and then reached in. Oh, and
Shattered the glass rather than punch a hole through a window? Because like it doesn't leave a hole. You break it all usually.
I don't know.
It's weird glass.
No, just kidding. I have a key to the thrift store because I work there. And so I let myself in with a key. That's a lot less glamorous and sexy. So thanks a lot, Laura, but whatever.
Behind the veil.
Behind the veil. We're behind the scenes at the Echo Thrift Shop. We've really gotten off on a tangent now.
So who did we talk to?
Oh, right. So we are super excited today. You should be excited too because we talked to somebody who's super awesome. We talked to Lynette Miles. She is an actress, a singer, a dancer, and a theater instructor.
What can't she do?
I know, right?
Talking with Lynette was incredible. She's a fantastic woman, and I'm really impressed by all that she's done. And, spoiler, she did inspire me to do something that has always been a secret dream of mine, which you will hear about in the podcast. I'm not going to really spoil it. You got to listen to hear it.
You got to listen. So Lynette and I met a couple of years ago working together at the Echo Thrift Shop where we were running a program for people with developmental disabilities with Friends in Action, which is a nonprofit that provides social and recreational activities to people with developmental disabilities, young adults. And so we were running this great program, and even I learned tons of stuff about Lynette that I didn't know before.
Oh, that's nice. She had a lot of cool history.
Yeah.
It's really cool.
Yeah, she's awesome.
And we'll talk about this in the podcast, but I'm thinking of it now. Being an actress, you're really putting yourself out there.
Yeah.
At the mercy of the viewers that are, you can literally see how they're taking it all in. And that's scary. And a lot of us have stage fright. And so someone to do that is double vulnerability, I think.
Yeah. Yes. Yeah. Yes. And they may like clap or they may throw tomatoes at you. You just have to take that
risk. I know. I carry tomatoes with me every time I go to theater.
Me too. Me too. Especially local theater, you know.
Yeah.
Really gotta like beat those people down. I'm just kidding. This is definitely gonna be edited out.
I don't know. It's kind of funny.
That was a terrible thing to say. If you're going to bring tomatoes to local theater, make sure they're local tomatoes. You know, support your local farmers when you're harassing your local thespians.
Or just give them a basket of tomatoes. I mean,
oh, that's nice too.
That's kind of a sweet gesture. Here,
keep in mind, it's somebody's job to clean up the tomatoes.
Oh, that poor guy.
Yes, back to the serious point that you made before we get off on a tomato tangent. We sometimes think like your creativity is sort of a mix of like your genetics and also your upbringing and also mm-hmm. your determination and your drive and your courage. And we also think like often that it's too late, like, oh, I'm too old to start doing X, Y, or Z, when really like you can pick up a creativity and creative habit at any age and mm-hmm. really start to harness it.
So we hope you enjoy this interview with Lynette. It is truly a fascinating journey. And we also wanted to say that this is one of our earlier podcasts, and it was recorded on more humble means when we were just starting out on this venture. But we definitely have the guts to keep going. So we are now recording on some more serious stuff. So keep listening, and the sound quality will only get better and better.
welcome. Thanks for joining us.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, it's going to be fun. So this is Creative Guts, and we told you a little bit about the podcast. We're looking to talk with people who are creative or express their creativity through their work and through their passion projects and what that looks like and how they balance all of that. And yeah.
So tell us a little bit about yourself.
So I think as far back as I can remember, I wanted to dance and sing. It was mostly dancing at first. And then I was obsessed with my mother's album collection, which was, you know, like The Sound of Music and all those Julie Andrews things. I don't know.
What age would you say you first got the bug? Like, as long as you can remember? Or was there a specific age you felt really inspired?
Well, I only remember I started dance lessons at 4. My mom put me in dance lessons at 4, and I loved it. Wow. And once I started first grade, I had a best friend, and I convinced her to join dance lessons. And then she quit in second grade, and I thought, well, I have to quit since my best friend did.
Oh, sure.
But then 2 weeks went by, and I was like, Mom, I want to go back to dance class. And that's awesome. So, yeah, I loved it. And then when I was about 12, my mother – I didn't have a lot of exposure to theater, musical theater, but we would go to Prescott Park. Mm-hmm. And I remember seeing a few shows there and just being like, wow, that's what I want to do that someday. And then when I think I was 12, my mom took me to Boston to see Annie. And that was it. Like, I have to do that. Aww. So
I'm very envious of that. Those people who like know what they want to do basically as soon as they walk out of the womb. They're like, yep, this is it.
Yeah.
And then like they do it and it actually turns into what their career is. It's very cool.
It's pretty crazy to think that like – I never actually did Annie. Of all the shows, it's like the one that they do everywhere, all the time. I've never done that show, but that was the one that hooked me.
You could be Miss Hannigan.
Totally. Yep. I did Annie 2. It was called Annie Warbucks, which nobody ever does, but I did that one.
Huh.
But, yeah. So just before I saw Annie, I still was like, got to be a ballerina. That's what I wanted to be. And I wanted to do a summer camp where you would just dance all summer. And my dance teacher was like, it's going to be really hard. Your toes are going to bleed and it's going to be so painful. And so I didn't go. And my parents were like, it's kind of expensive. So do you really want to do it?
Yeah.
So I didn't go do that. But then I discovered musical theater and found out I could sing. I remember specifically after seeing Annie being in our living room, and my sister could play the piano. Mm-hmm. I couldn't. But my mom got the like piano book for the Annie songs, and my sister was playing, and I was singing, like belting them out, imitating Annie. And like everyone stopped in the house, and my mother was like looking around the corner at me, and she said, Joe, that was my dad's name. Joe, Lynette can really sing.
Oh my gosh.
I remember that so specifically.
That's such a good story.
That must have felt like such a great motivator too. Like, oh, this thing I love,
I can do it.
Yeah. That's great to have that reinforcement, you know, at a young age.
That was definitely, you know, that spurred me wanting to audition for shows, and then you get in shows and you want to do more and more. So yeah.
What was the first production you were a part of? At what age and what was it?
It wasn't until I was 14 that I auditioned for Fiddler on the Roof at a community theater, and I was in the ensemble.
Aww.
And I had one singing, I think my line was like, could it be?
That's awesome.
But we did, you know, I was in all the dance numbers and stuff, but I didn't get cast as one of the daughters, which was what I really wanted. I was ensemble. And then the next year I did Camelot with that same group. When I was 16, I got a big role in a summer theater thing where I was actually paid $100.
Wow.
You never hear that. That's awesome. Right.
It was a program where it was really unique. They were kind of recruited from local high schools, which my high school didn't even have anything. But my mom saw this article in the paper and I had to go and audition, and I got into that. And that was when one of the teachers for that summer program talked about auditioning for college and stuff. And I was like, what? You can go to college for this? Oh my God. So She recommended Syracuse University. She thought it had one of the best musical theater programs. And so I auditioned there and I got in, which I had no idea at the time that that was like a big deal.
Yeah.
And I went for a year, but then my dad was like, this is how much debt you're going to be in after 4 years of this. Yeah. And you're going to be an actress. Like, my dad was not all about it.
Yeah.
my mom was. She like, I think she had the same like dreams and wanted me to do it. But my dad really didn't. So he said, all I'm going to ask you to do is go talk to someone at UNH. Mm-hmm. And then if you don't like it, I guess we'll figure it out. But I went to talk to someone at UNH, and it was Carol Luca Burns, who was the head of musical theater. And she's a very strong personality. And she said, I'll give you a scholarship. So it was basically free after she gave me money. And my dad was like, come on, just give it a try.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah. And did you like it at UNH?
I liked it at first, but like the beginning of the first semester, I was okay. I really liked the dance program. Mm. Let me skip back. In between my freshman and sophomore year, I worked at Canobie Lake Park as a performer. And the company was based out of Indianapolis.
Oh, weird.
So then the next summer, after I finished my sophomore year at UNH, so I auditioned for Canobie Lake Park in Syracuse. And I ended up in New Hampshire, Canobie Lake Park. But then the company asked me the next summer if I wanted to go to Nice, France, and work in an amusement park there. So I was like, yeah.
Duh.
But Carol Luca Burns, actually, I don't know if she hears this, but she knows it's true. She was like, I don't think you should do that.
Yeah.
Because she had – the fall show was – she had me pegged for, like, the lead. Nobody ever came out and said that exactly, but I know it was true.
Yeah.
And there happened to be a guest director – directing another show at UNH at that time, who his name is Tony Kushner. He went on to win like Pulitzer Prize, Tony Awards. He became a big Broadway director. And I wanted to audition for his show. And it came down to, do I go to Nice or do his show? And he was like, are you nuts? Go to Nice.
Yeah.
You're going to stay here and do a little part in my play. It was Mother Courage, a play without music and dancing, which I thought I needed that on my resume, but he said, you're nuts. Go to Nice.
Right.
You're never going to get another chance like this. Yeah. And I never did, actually. So, I mean, like lots of other opportunities, but that was really unique to live in Nice. And
yeah. How long were you there for?
6 months. So I had to also take
How?
Yeah. And the other thing is, in high school, I was like, French or theater? Because French was my other favorite thing in high school, and I loved my French teacher. But so when I was in Nice singing and dancing, that
best
was
of both worlds.
Right.
Wow.
Cool.
You must be soaking up so much inspiration. You know, was there French theater? Was there other acting things that you were an observer of?
Actually, you know, it's funny. I never did when I was there. I mean, I got to know all the other performers in the park, in the amusement park, but the rest of the time I was just a sight, like seeing sights.
Yeah.
I didn't go see theater over there.
So what was your part at the amusement park?
I mean, we were all an ensemble where we did kind of a Broadway review, and then we did one called Surfin' USA.
That's and, cute. And then, I was picturing like Disney Princess, but I guess that's a totally different thing.
Yeah, it was none of that. It was all Broadway stuff in one show, and then like the Beach Boys and like songs from that era. But that was 1988.
Tell me about the Crown Odyssey cruise ship.
That was a 6-month contract as well, where I had a lot of friends who had done cruise ships, and they would go like back and forth from, you know, Miami to the Bahamas or something for 6 months. The one I got on, I didn't know anything about it when I just auditioned. It was the only one I ever auditioned for, and I lucked out because it went all over the world.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah. Wow. We didn't repeat our itinerary much at all. We started in LA, went to Hawaii, went down the side of Mexico, and then all the way down through the Panama Canal, up the other side of South America. We went all the way down to like Argentina.
Oh my gosh.
Then crossed the Atlantic, Africa, the Mediterranean.
So really?
Up to Scandinavia and Russia.
Wow.
USSR back then. So.
Wow.
And when you're doing this, you are able to take breaks and go visit these countries?
Yeah. Oh, that was the best part because we worked very little.
Yeah.
On those 6 months, we had...
That sounds awesome.
So if it was a one-week cruise, we had one show.
Oh.
One night of... Well, one night of two shows because mm-hmm. it was like per seating, you know, the dinner seatings, mm-hmm. and then there'd be a show. And then if it was a two-week cruise, we had two shows. Three-week cruise, we had three shows. So...
That is bonkers.
Yeah. So there was a lot of time to drink and eat, and I gained a lot of weight. I barely fit into my costumes.
Oh, no. Like, oh my god!
They actually had like weigh-ins for us. I don't know if they still do that, but wow. Like they had to weigh you and make sure you weren't
living it up too much
because they weren't going to remake your costumes. So because wow. They were expensive costumes.
And yeah. What kind of shows were you doing? Is it all
it was
married?
Very similar to amusement park type of things, like reviews, a Broadway review, a Cole Porter review, and then we had an Americana review.
That sounds incredible. Like, they don't even really, like, have to pay you at that point. Like, who cares? That's awesome.
Yeah.
And that's when my dad kind of switched his...
Yeah,
because he was in the Coast Guard, so I was out on a ship actually making really good money, not spending any of it. Yeah. I was sending it home... They were putting it in the bank for me. It was just like getting wired home. I don't know how that worked.
Oh my gosh.
So my dad was like, oh, she's making money. She's on a ship.
Right. I'm assuming you like slept and ate for free the whole time.
Exactly.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow.
That sounds ideal.
Don't you wish you could sing? You can sing. Get on a ship.
A little, but I get very seasick, so I'm not sure.
Oh.
Obviously you don't, I'm guessing.
Well, I got a little sick. What do they call it? Your sea legs? That's a thing. Like, because the first time I got off the ship, I was like rocking on on this flat land, but I never got really sick until we went to Hawaii.
And so now these days, you're doing a lot of performing with
local.
Oh my gosh,
theaters.
I'm blanking on all of them. The local theaters in the New Hampshire Seacoast region, Rochester Opera House.
Hackmatack Playhouse. I did a lot there over the years since I've been home in New Hampshire.
Yeah.
And the Players Ring in Portsmouth. And I just did one at the Music Hall Loft, which was a big challenge because it was a one-woman show.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh, wow.
Oh, that's interesting.
That one actually broke me for a little while. I think I'm not doing anything this summer.
I just needed a break.
Yeah. It was stressful. I mean, I loved it, but it was pretty stressful.
Wow. So what was it? What did it entail exactly?
It was the kind of like a biography of Julie Andrews. So I sang all these songs that Julie Andrews sang, which was kind of like no pressure there.
Right.
Yeah. Seriously, I love her so much. Yeah. I used to watch her everything she did when I was a kid.
And that's where it all began, if you remember, my mother's albums with Julie Andrews. So it was like... and I did Sound of Music 3 times, but I never got to play Maria, which so many people have always said, like, oh, that's a perfect role for you.
Yeah.
But I got to sing all those songs, not all of them, but a bunch of them in this show. So,
oh my gosh.
I've seen Lynette twice. Both times were at the Seacoast Rep. A New Brain, which I don't know if anybody's ever heard of that.
It's very obscure.
So good. And then Hunchback, of course. Which a lot less obscure. Everybody knows Hunchback.
Yeah.
Can you tell us what your favorite is of all these like local theaters, or is that like a code you'd be breaking? You love them all equally?
Yes. I have to say I do love Hackmatack Playhouse because it's probably the least pressure, if that makes sense. I don't know. And it's out in the middle of nowhere, mm-hmm. Maine, yeah. And there are bison in the field and you can always find a place to park.
Yeah.
You just drive there and park in the field. And everybody there is just so nice.
Have you ever heard of the Celebration Barn Theater in Maine?
No.
It's way out there. It's in western Maine in South Paris. When I was a teenager, I had a summer job there cleaning. And it was like a theater camp for mostly adults. I saw Tom Bergeron there. Stuff with some students, and Avner the Eccentric. I don't know if you've ever heard of him, but he was in the Romancing the Stone movies or whatever. And so they did a lot of like clown and mime type stuff, but they also had some acting stuff. And I didn't know if that was like still known as a thing.
That's interesting.
But yeah.
Is it still going or you don't know?
I don't know. That was, you know, 15 years ago, I guess. But you'd be around, you know, people throwing rings and doing weird stuff. And it was...
I'll have to look it up. That sounds really
cool. Yeah, it was really neat. And it was very like, you know, in the middle of nowhere, out in the woods type of vibe. Kind of what you were describing. Mm-hmm. So it kind of was... It brought back a memory. This podcast is all about creativity and kind of what you, you know, your passion and what you're in love with. You know, how... Can you talk about creativity and what kind of, what you inject in the characters that you play and how you do that? Have you ever acted, Sarah, in anything?
No.
I haven't either. I'm fascinated by it.
Costumes and the makeup and like the set props.
I designed sets in high school.
Yeah, me too. That's funny. I prefer being backstage. On stage is scary. And I'm a public speaker too, so I don't know.
I have no skills in painting or sewing or anything like that. So.
See, we make a good team.
So acting is hard for me to describe and talk about. It really is. Because it's so, to me, it's hard to grasp. Like, a lot of people can look at an actor and love them or hate them. Mm-hmm. It's so subjective.
Yeah.
Whereas singing, you can either sing or you can't, pretty much.
Right.
Then there's, you know, variations of whether you prefer a different quality or whatever, but you can hit the notes, you can have volume or not.
It's more, you know, quantifiable.
Right. Yeah. And same with dance. You can do the double pirouette or you can't.
Yeah.
But with acting, it's hard to just say that person's good and that person's not, you know? Yeah,
Like art, it really is art because you can't exactly say why you do or don't like something sometimes.
Have you ever done a role that you were just not comfortable doing or didn't feel confident doing?
I'm sure I have. I just right now can't think of... I mean, I think I always try to find... There's always something to like about pretty much any role, I think. I usually just start with the script. Mm-hmm. And read it a bunch of times and find the things that are exciting or, you know, that make me go, ooh, I want to try this that way or, you know, whatever. Mm-hmm. And then acting technique is so hard to talk about for me. I mean, I think probably other people are better at it, but I go to the script and there's different physical ways you can come at it. And then there's, you know, internal ways.
Sarah, you're being ejected from this podcast.
I'm being taken away.
Do you feel like, as an actor, do you inject a part of you into characters?
Definitely.
Yeah.
Like, I think I was taught that way, too, that you are in every character. You can't not be. So you don't try to fight that. But you find you find the character that you can layer over you. Mm-hmm. But you're always in there.
So playing a mom is really easy then. You're like, oh, yeah, I know how to do that. I do it all the time.
It's actually harder to play. And I've heard other actors say this, too, and I totally agree. It's sometimes harder to play roles that are very much like you. If I'm playing, like, a crazy person, it's so much easier to, you know, like, go out of myself. And that's the thing that I love about acting the most is that zen of going away from yourself.
Yeah.
That's so interesting.
So when you're singing a song that you love and really connecting to the words and the music or acting in a role or dancing and you just are so in the moment.
On the flip side, have characters that you've played influenced your life or your personality or yourself?
Hmm.
Over time, maybe, or maybe not. I don't know. But I feel like I've heard some actors speak about how, like, they played a role for so long that influenced either the way they talk or maybe what they thought about something.
I wonder if that's more common when, like, you're doing, like, a long TV series or something. So you do it over multiple years. Or, like, these roles where people have to, like, lose a ton of weight or, like, you know, do a lot of, like, physical stuff to get ready for the role. I'm thinking of Castaway.
Oh, yeah.
I immediately went to Castaway.
Or Christian Bale.
He
loses 100 pounds every other year.
It's crazy.
I've never done anything that extreme, but it's hard to say, like, just getting older and evolving as a person, have some of the roles I've played played into that, or is it just living life? And because I've definitely changed since I was in my 20s. I mean, we all do, right? But
we hope so.
But it is hard, like, doing something really emotional. I can let it go easily in my brain, but not in my body sometimes.
Yeah.
That's hard.
In your creative gut?
Just like in my shoulders, in my places where you hold tension and stuff. Yeah. Like that's...
It sits with you.
Yeah.
That's interesting. So let's talk about your other hat, your work with Friends in Action. So this is how Lynette and I met. We both worked for Friends in Action, which is a nonprofit based out of Durham that provides social and recreational activities to young adults with developmental disabilities. So we worked together on their program in the Echo Thrift Shop, which has been super duper fun. We're literally hanging out.
And you get good clothes.
Yep, you get good clothes. You get the first picks. We got to work with people with disabilities and hanging out in the thrift store and, you know, teaching them some things, but it was more social and recreational. So it was a lot of just having fun and connecting them with college students, which was fun. But Lynette, outside of Echo Thrift Shop, also teaches their theater class. So tell us about that and how you got into that.
So Heidi went and talked to the Durham Recreation Department, and I had taught a theater class through them for middle school kids, which I didn't love. I don't know. I've had a lot of different teaching experiences over the years, but nothing steady because I never was like, ooh, I love this.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But Heidi asked me if I would come and do a theater class for people with disabilities. And luckily, I had just before then worked as a one-on-one through One Sky.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Yeah.
That's so funny.
It's just, I think it was for like one semester, kind of, half a year. And one of the women, young women that I worked with took a theater class at New Hampshire Theater Project in Portsmouth. So I went with her, and when I was doing that with her, I thought, wow, this is something I think I might like to do. And then that was total karma, or whatever you want to call it. Heidi calls me up out of the blue, where we want to start a theater program, and I got your name from Sandy at the Durham Rec. And I was just like, wow, yeah, I'll come talk to you about it.
That's like the universal line.
Yes. Wow. It was really cool. And I was also, I was terrified because I just went as a one-on-one, and there was a teacher who did everything, but now I had to figure out, what am I going to do? And he, I actually knew the guy who was the teacher of that other class, and he's an actor, not a musical theater person, mm-hmm. which is a different species. And I thought, well, if I do this, it's going to be musical theater because that's what I do.
Right.
So we started out and we did All Shook Up, which is like an Elvis musical.
Oh,
fun.
That's awesome.
Because I had done it a few times before, and I thought, there was a guy in the class, Brian, who was all about Elvis back then anyway, and they all loved all the songs.
How long ago was this?
This was, I think, about 8 years ago. Yeah. But I did, you know, All Shook Up is a 2-hour whatever show, but I cut it down just to like the best songs and a few lines, and it was tricky. Because a lot of people in the class didn't get the concept of, like, you speak and then the person over there speaks. Uh-huh. And then so I thought about it over the break. And then the next class, everybody wanted to do Grease. So we did Grease, which was still tricky because to put in the story, the lines, it was just tricky. So then the next semester I started to do my own thing where I just said, I'm going to pick a bunch of songs that everybody loves. Mm-hmm. And put a theme to it. Oh. And so the talking would just be about themselves or about the theme, you know. So yeah. And then it just sort of evolved from there. I started using Shakespeare in one of them, which everybody seemed to love. We used like the speech from Macbeth.
Oh, wow.
I don't even remember what the theme was for that one, but it worked.
There's been so many of them.
Yeah, I really regret that. Over these 8 years, so there's like 16 productions I've done with Friends in Action, and I don't have any video I didn't even keep like my notes of what I did with each one.
Maybe going forward.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Every semester I say I got to do that, and I never.
Yeah.
Because it becomes like that week a frenzy of.
I can remember like the last five, and I can't help you before that.
But I actually, this summer, I am going to write something.
Really?
Cool.
That's my plan anyway. I hope it actually comes together. But I've written one song, which I've never written a song before. I've always wanted to. But my husband writes songs, so he helped me figure out the chords. And because I took music theory, like the minimal that you had to get a musical theater degree. But I'm not very good at it. But I could hear it in my head, and he helped me figure out the chords. So I think it's going to be basically about me or this character of the teacher of the theater class for people with disabilities.
Oh my God. Being, so not you at all.
Not me at all. Being scared to do this class. And then the arc of like falling in love with the students and this whole thing of Friends in Action. Yeah.
So cool. I love
that. It's very rough in my head right now, but I'm hoping I can get it together this summer and it could evolve a little. I don't know how many times I can do it.
Yeah.
But my plan was, I told Heidi my dream. I don't know if this is a plan or a dream, but to write this and then take it around like a mini tour.
Yeah.
And I know I could do it at the Players Ring because they would let me bring it there. But how many of my students and friends in action could actually do that and make it? So, yeah.
How long have you kind of thought about writing?
I've always wanted to be able to write songs forever, like as long as I can remember. But I have a big obsession with musical theater. So why write songs when I can always find ones that I love that are out there? Which, you know, it's like an endless supply.
Yeah.
But I think just my – I kind of felt like I hit a – what is it? Like 8 years, 16 productions with Friends in Action. I started to feel like I have a formula. I want to do something new.
Yeah.
So it just kind of hit me about a month ago now. Like, I want to write something. Mm-hmm. I want to take it out of Durham, too, and kind of – because I also have a couple people in my class, like Doug, and they want to perform. They want to go be in a theater, and I want to do that with them, you know, so.
That's giving them the opportunity.
Yeah, yeah.
And that's what a beautiful story.
Like, and I just thought –
message.
Yeah.
Since this is what I do, I could help make it more entertaining or something if I actually take a part in it. But I don't know. I'm a little leery of that because I don't want it to be like, Lynette's doing this because she wants to be.
Right.
Right now in my head, I would do like the first song to introduce the – and then it would be all about them. Mm-hmm. And then maybe at the end I'd wrap it up with – how like it changed
much
me.
Like the format of our podcast. We do an intro, we have our interview, and then we do a tiny little exit.
Yep.
You know? I feel like there's a good symmetry to
nice
that.
Balance.
So I think it makes sense.
Yeah.
So I hope it comes together.
Now, are you helping Heidi and Amanda write this book about Friends in Action too?
I haven't yet. Heidi's talked about it, but then I was telling her about this, and she said, why write a book when you have a musical? I'm like, well, let's see if we actually do have a musical. But
where do you find inspiration for your songs? Is it through actual experience? I mean, obviously, it's very close to home with experiences, but do you find other outside forces that influence how you write music?
I don't know yet. I've only written one. I've done one, but this one is definitely about my experience with people with disabilities when I was younger and actually being afraid of people with disabilities and then meeting more people with disabilities and getting outside of my comfort zone. That's actually the name of the song, Comfort Zone.
Oh, I love it. All right. So talk to us about if an aspiring actor or actress can actually make a living. What advice would you have for a young person who wants to do this as their career? It's not very reliable.
No.
It's pretty flexible.
Flexible?
You can take the summer off if you want, but then you're not making any money.
Well, when you're doing it, you don't, like your jobs, your gigs, when you get one, that's your vacation. So you don't need to take time off. You can't afford to take time off, but you have another job like waiting tables or.
Yeah.
And then if you're lucky enough to get a paying job, that's when you are on vacation, basically. Even though you're working hard and you're performing, but.
You're doing your dream.
It's do what you love. Yeah, you're doing what you love. So I would say if you look at it like that and you have something else you can do to make money, then go for it.
Yeah. Yeah.
What advice would you give your younger self of your, you know, somewhere along your journey? Is there some advice you would give yourself?
Definitely be more confident. I know I told you, like, when I was in college, I knew I was going straight to Broadway. But then probably less than a year, maybe even just like 4 or 5 months after being in New York, after I graduated from college, I started to compare myself to everyone else in the audition room. And I was just a bad auditioner and as far as dance, because I would look at myself in the mirror and go, oh, I'm not as skinny as her. I was always comparing myself, and don't do that.
Yeah, it's a trap. Yeah.
And what else? And have other interests. I was just too obsessed with musical theater, which you kind of have to be a little bit. But it wasn't until I was in my late 20s that I started to like be a person outside of musical theater obsessed girl. Yeah.
Speaking about confidence, being creative and sharing what you love and your passion involves a level of vulnerability. You know, I'm an artist, I'm a musician, like I have stage fright, but I still kind of do it.
My stage fright has just like gotten so much worse as I get older.
I was gonna ask, like, how do you deal with that vulnerability?
It's funny because when I was younger, I really didn't have much stage fright. I'd get a little nervous, but I think I was more confident, even though I said I was. It's hard to explain, but
you aren't.
I was just naive, I guess. I was naive.
Yeah, you become more aware of people judging you, of people's popular opinion. And I feel like that, you know, you stop being a kid. Like a lot of, you know, adults think they're not creative because they drew and did art and sculpture or whatever, dance when they were kids. And then they, at some point,
grow out of it.
Yeah. Or we're taught like, well, this isn't feasible. You're not going to make money. Don't pursue this thing you love because you need to buy food and stuff. But, you know, like
buying food is overrated.
Yeah. But a lot of folks that, you know, are creative and just have no other option but to express it somehow, to pursue it, even if it doesn't make the money, you do it on the side. And that's, you know, like you said, your vacation. You know, how do you harness that if you're also scared to show it? You know, it's a tough thing.
I also think as you get older, at least in the performing arts, I don't know how it is for a painter or something, but you have more experience of messing up.
Yes.
When you're younger, and I feel like my brain was just sharper, or I don't know if it was just my brain, but then the first time you're on stage and you forget a line or you do something wrong, you have that fear that you're like, oh my God. And then the next time you go on stage, even if it's just the next night, you're like, what if that happens again?
Yeah.
And then the older you get, you have more experience of that.
Yeah.
And it becomes, and then you get to like, it gets a little harder to memorize the lines now at the age I am now. I feel like it's, I don't know if it's my brain or that I just have so many other things in my life, you know?
Yeah,
like your life gets more complicated the older you get. Yeah.
A lot of stuff like that.
Yeah.
Because a lot of people have said to me, how can you be so afraid? Like young castmates when I'm doing a show, you've been doing this forever. Why are you so scared? And I'll say, because I've been doing this forever that I think I'm so scared. And I thought I was weird, but then I started to read, like, Julie Andrews, actually. I just did this Julie Andrews show, and she, as she got into her 50s, was really scared, like got horrible stage fright. Barbara Streisand, same thing, in her 50s, horrible stage fright, didn't perform live for like 10 years. And Judy Garland, same thing. Like, they were all in their middle age, and got terrified.
Yeah, and I feel like, you know, as a visual artist, you can put it up on the wall and walk away, and if you avoid any reviews, if you're so lucky to get any, or, you know, stand near people who are talking about your work, you know, that's the only time you're going to really get feedback. The other feedback is nobody buys your stuff, and that can be tough too, but it's interesting because there's two sides to it. There's the process and the product, and like your vulnerability and fear comes from fear of judgment of the results, like of what people think. But there's the process element, which is what drives you because it makes you so happy. So I feel like there's this duality in all of us of doing what we love for nobody else because we love it. But you have to do it for someone else because we're a community and that's how we express and evolve.
Right.
I don't know where the question is in that, but it's just it's a weird, like, I wish we could just get to a point where we just are great with the process.
Have you ever heard of Sunday in the Park with George, the musical?
No.
It's all about the painter, George Seurat.
Oh, really?
And his process and these ideas of what we were just talking about, so...
We should go see that someday.
Nobody ever does it. Because it's really hard to do. It's Stephen Sondheim and it's very complicated.
But we'll keep our ears open.
Yeah, you can see clips on YouTube.
Yeah. We'll go find it on YouTube. It's research for the podcast.
And does, you're influencing younger folks. Does that inspire you even more? I mean, obviously it is if you're going to be writing about it, but, you know, do you get extra fuel from... you know, seeing it in the faces of others who are, you know, it's kind of very cyclical.
Definitely, yeah. Watching them. Because with people with disabilities, it's, I feel like a little unpredictable. Mm-hmm. But I'm sure it is with any class situation and the teacher, but maybe more so with young adults with disabilities. Mm-hmm. I have some students that will really not be into it all semester. And then they get out, that they see the audience and... something clicks and they perform. They perform the hell out of it. And I just love that. I love watching them. And now that I've been doing it for 8 years, it's mostly the same students for 8 years.
Right.
And they really get what we're doing now. At first they didn't quite, there were some that just didn't quite get. And then, after they saw the first audience, they're like, oh.
Yeah.
All right. Ready for rapid fire?
Uh-oh.
We're going to get you.
Favorite movie?
This is so weird, but it's King Kong.
Which one?
The one with Jessica Lange.
Okay.
Very interesting.
I haven't seen it in a really long time, but that's been my answer for many years. So I think it was the first movie that made me cry.
Aww.
When his heart was beating at the end and then it slows down and then it stops.
That gets me too.
Yeah. Oh my goodness.
Favorite play?
Oh, there's so many. Maybe A Chorus Line, because it's about people auditioning, people who love musical theater.
Yeah.
So I'd have to say, I guess I have to say A Chorus Line. And it's probably the one that I did the most in my career, which is lucky because it's one that I love.
Yeah. Ooh, I'll jump. I have one in my head. favorite era of music?
Maybe the 30s and 40s, kind of big band-ish. Yeah. That kind of Frank Sinatra.
So this next question, which I've been very excited to ask, if you have played both, do you like playing good guys or bad guys? Have you played any bad guys?
I have played a lot of bad guys, especially as you get older. Apparently, once you're 40 and up as a woman, you're a witch. Evil. Bad guys are more fun. Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, yeah. But the most fun is crazy.
Yeah. Which is just, it's like chaotic neutral. It's not good or bad. It's just chaos.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I played a hooker one time. That was really fun.
That's got to be really freeing.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
That's very, very, very far away from your real life.
Just a hooker on the street. You don't actually see her.
Yeah.
Hookering.
Doing your job.
Right.
Favorite color?
Blue.
Favorite scent?
Citrus.
Oh, that's a great one.
That's a great answer.
Yeah, that's such a nice smell. Favorite sound? Musicals.
I like rain.
The sound of music.
Oh my God. Get out.
A tenor voice. I love a good tenor. Like Pavarotti.
Yeah. Oh. And favorite texture?
Fur?
Yeah.
Real
on cake? My cat.
Yeah.
My live cat.
Yeah. It's funny because my answer to this would definitely be petting my Benny rabbit. Mm-hmm. And so far we've gotten cat fur and we've gotten petting my pet bird. So
Yeah.
I have a question, but it's not on here or related to exactly what you do, but have you ever done vocal acting?
Oh, I haven't done just voiceovers, no.
No. It's a secret dream of mine.
Really?
Yeah. And there's a class in next Monday happening somewhere in York, Maine. They're doing a vocal acting, a basics class. And I think I might go.
You should go.
Yeah.
I think
I'm
you
nervous.
Should go.
I've never done acting or anything like that. But I've always secretly wanted to really bad. And especially lately vocal acting. I like doing impersonations and impressions and stuff, and I think it'd be fun, but probably hard to do. I don't know. But
it's worth trying.
Yeah. And we sort of, I sort of thought like, hey, a podcast is a nice way to ease into that.
Yeah.
Her voice is going to get discovered on this podcast.
Yes.
That's so good. Sarah should interview you about,
yep. about your voice.
You'll have a different persona with every question.
Yeah. So tell us about your really long and amazing commercial acting career.
Long and amazing.
I've seen you in a Pepsi commercial.
I just have the two, really, that were national commercials, but...
Pepsi played during the Super Bowl?
Yeah. So it was actually Diet Pepsi.
I'm so sorry. Diet Pepsi.
Diet Pepsi, which was... I was in that as an extra, but then I got just randomly, you, come here. And they put me in a Pepsi uniform, like I was a Pepsi worker. And with the union rules for commercials... If you are easily recognizable on screen, reacting to the product, then you get bumped up to a,
oh, cool.
like a player rate or whatever. Yeah. So I got residuals and everything. So yeah, that
Very
was awesome.
Cool.
Played a lot, and I got a lot of checks in the mail, which
That's
was nice.
Awesome. Yeah. That's so cool. So what did you do in the commercial?
The Pepsi machine. It was the weirdest commercial. The Pepsi machine was. In the Super Bowl, like he was a player. He was the Pepsi machine was a linebacker, and you just see this Pepsi machine going down the field. But I was a Pepsi worker who was one of the people who filled that machine. So we were so emotional. There was a group of us that had to get all emotional about our machine was going to be in the Super Bowl.
Go machine, go!
Oh my god, that's awesome! You have to send me that.
And there were like Patriots cheerleaders in the commercial too. And I would tell people I was in this commercial. Look for it. It's playing on Super Bowl. And they go, were you a cheerleader? I'm like, no. There's no way. I don't look like that. Are you crazy?
And now but your other commercial I never saw.
That was the CVS commercial.
You get recognized now when you go to CVS. They've all watched
it. I mean, that was around 2005 as well. So, although... probably 10 years later, a younger friend of mine went to Vegas, and the CVS on the Vegas Strip was playing that commercial on a big screen.
She texted me,
did you do a CVS commercial? And I said, yeah, why? And it's playing on the Vegas Strip at
That's
the CVS.
So
That's awesome.
Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Fun.
This has been awesome. I've learned a lot, and... also been sort of slightly inspired to maybe try vocal acting a little.
Yeah.
Perhaps.
Do it.
But yeah, thank you so much.
Thank you.
This has been wicked fun.
Thank you guys.
That was great.
And we have a tradition that we've started on how we end it.
Show us your creative guts.
If you want to learn more about Friends in Action and the work that Lynette does with the organization, visit friendsinactionnh.org, and you can find Friends in Action NH on Facebook and Instagram. You can also visit the Friends in Action crew on Mondays and Tuesdays at the Echo Thrift Shop. It's at 17 Main Street in the lower level of the Community Church of Durham. Laura and I can attest for how cute the clothes are because that's where we're sitting right now.
We're very tempted.
Very tempted. I may or may not have already bought 4 or 5 things. By bought, I mean stolen, because it's 9 p.m.
Well, you're already punching holes in glass panes, so why not?
That Breaking
well.
The law.
And thank you so much to Lynette. It was so wonderful to speak with you and learn and be inspired to do yet another creative endeavor that I've sort of been dreaming of. So you made an impact on me, and I'm going to be doing something related to that pretty soon. I'm not going to say what it is yet, but... It's very exciting. So thank you for that. If you liked listening to this interview and you want to hear more, you should definitely listen, subscribe, and like Creative Guts on all major platforms where podcasts are found. And you can definitely also peek behind the veil, as it were, into the Creative Guts studio, which is kind of a traveling studio. We hop from place to place, much like Sarah's bunny. And we are on Facebook. Long road to get there. You can find us on Facebook, where we'll be sharing updates and posting selfies with our guests and inevitably, I'm just going to let you know right now, there will be some bunny pictures. I will try to hold her back, but I know it's going to happen. Sarah will take over the reins when I'm not looking. I step out of the room for a minute and boom, you're going to get a bunny. It's going to be cute. It's going to be enjoyable. So don't get me wrong. It's fine, but I'm just warning you.
I'm going to put the headphones on Luna and like we can interview Luna. It'll be so adorable.
Do they have to be extra long for her big ears?
Aww.
We're going to do a little countdown, and at the same time, we're all going to say, show us your creative guts, in whatever cadence you want. I kind of...
I know. You really, like forced it.
Yeah, sorry. All right, so...
Show us your creative guts.
See, we kept the cadence.
Yeah.
Show us your creative guts.
And now,
show us your creative guts.
Yes.